morning, and it is a good morning indeed. Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be open, and you may ultimately change your mind towards these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news, and this morning we're going to talk about the resignation of Cardinal Ratzinger, my mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, because he ain't telling the truth, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with his guidance, you will be able to replace your religion, particularly if you are Roman Catholic, with reason, engage in an actual relationship with God as opposed to that poisonous institution known as the Church. Our phone number, if you'd like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say during this next 2 hours, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. And please, by all means, if you're a Catholic, call in and try to defend your Pope. Three have fallen now. We have a cardinal, a bishop, and a pope. All fell for the same reason. It was Pope Benedict, formerly Cardinal Ratzinger, Cardinal Mahoney, and Bishop Curry. They all fell for the same reason. They are all up to their eyeballs in the priestly abuse scandal. They all participated in the cover-up. They were accessories to the crime. No more so than Pope Benedict. He was the worst of a bad lot. That is why he resigned. The news this morning, I'll read excerpts of an article from the BBC so that we all have our footing. Pope Benedict the 16th, who was formerly Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, is to resign at the end of the month after nearly 8 years at the head of the Catholic Church, saying that he's too old to continue at the age of 85. By the way, no pope has resigned their position for 600 years. So if you think that he's telling you the truth, that age is the issue, then I guess you'll believe anything. The unexpected development, it's not unexpected at all, when they caused the Catholic Church, after the disclosures in Los Angeles that proved that the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church was directly involved in aiding and abetting pedophiles and covering up their crimes, and not only lost over $600 million in a lawsuit to the victims that they had abused, but were forced by that court settlement to disclose the documents without names being redacted of who was responsible for the cover-up. And those names included Cardinal Mahoney and Bishop Curry. They were canned. Well, the man who's got more fingerprints on memos directing Roman Catholic clergy to cover up the crimes of pedophilia is Pope Benedict the 16th, while he was Cardinal Ratzinger. And he knows it. And he's resigning because of it. The Vatican says it expects a new pope to be elected before Easter. Isn't that just perfect? Easter is a purely pagan holiday. Has absolutely nothing to do with Yahweh, with Yahusha, with Scripture, and has everything to do with the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God, the Semiramis, who became known as Ishtar in the Babylonian religion. In fact, Easter is named for Ishtar, the Mother of God, the Queen of Heaven, in the Babylonian religion. It's perfect. Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger became pope in 2005 after John Paul II's death. The BBC's David Wiley in Rome says the move came as a shock, but in theory there has never been anything stopping Pope Benedict or any of his predecessors from stepping aside. To say this comes as a shock is to have not read the news regarding the resignations of Cardinal Mahoney and Bishop Curry. a Vatican spokesperson, Father Federico Lombardi. Federico Lombardi is the ultimate associate of these scum. He is the fellow who is always called out to denounce the truth. When the Roman Catholic Church gets its hand or other object caught in a place where it should not be, they always roll out Federico Lombardi to accuse those who would speculate regarding the truth, for those who would bring up questions about the veracity of the Roman Catholic Church. He is their go-to boy in this regard. He said that the Pope's closest aides did not know what he was planning to do and were left incredulous. They all know. Every one of them knows. They've all read the memo that Ratzinger wrote, a memo that I will read highlights of to you today during this program. They've all read it. They had to read it. They were forced to read it. They know who wrote it. They know what it pertains to. They know it's directly related to the resignations of Curry and Mahoney, a pope, a cardinal, and a bishop. Federico Lombardi said that the decision showed great courage and determination. Yes. Resigning in the face of accusations that you participated in the most heinous cover-up in the history of religion takes great courage and determination. What takes courage is doing the right thing, is bowing your back and saying that priestly pedophilia is wrong, and those priests who commit acts of sexual violence against children must be exposed. They must be punished. They must be expelled from the church. And the church is not to stand for it. That would have taken courage to cover it up so the church's reputation remained intact. And so all of those parishioners that they had duped out of their money would continue to send in their checks. That takes no courage at all. And in the face of all of this, to resign like a coward, that takes no courage either. Giving up. Not admitting your complicity in this heinous crime isn't an act of determination. It's disgusting. In a statement, the pontiff said, "After having repeatedly examined my conscience before God, he has no conscience, and he has never been before God. He does not know God. God does not know him, although God has an accounting of every revolting thing this man has done. He will come before God. He will be on his knees before Yahweh. He will be judged by him. He will spend his eternity in Sheol, along with Satan. Of that I am certain, because Yahweh was extraordinarily clear to us as to what crime deserved that punishment. The vast preponderance of souls go to neither heaven nor hell. Only a tiny percentage are invited to enter Yahweh's home, and they do so by embracing the terms and conditions of the covenant, of which there are five. And a tiny percentage of humankind, those who advocate religion and thus lead people away from God, as this Pope did, spend their eternity in Sheol, the place of separation, of ultimate damnation. There's no tortures there. God is not there. It is eternal separation from God. The vast majority of human souls simply cease to exist at the end of their earthly lives. This man, however, committed the unforgivable sin. So he went on to say, "I have come to the certainty that my strengths, due to an advanced age, are no longer suited to an adequate exercise of patrine ministry." Well, it has nothing to do with his advanced age. And his strengths were in enforcing silence over everyone in the clergy over its heinous crime of abusing sexually children. He went on to say, I'm well aware that this ministry, due to its essential spiritual nature, must be carried out not only with words and deeds, but no less with prayer and suffering. There is a spirit associated with the Roman Catholic Church. It is the spirit of Satan. I don't say that because I'm speculating. I say that because Yahusha told us he had seven open letters to humankind recorded in the opening chapters of Revelation that was given to Yahochanan. The second, third, and fourth of those open letters speak of the Roman Catholic Church. They say that it is, Yahusha said, it was the seat of Satan, that it was married to the Lord, who is Satan, calling it Jezebelian, married to Baal, the Lord, Satan, and that it was dead. So there is a spirit. It's just not the spirit of God. And the spiritual things are carried out in words and in thoughts. They are not carried out in deeds. God provides absolutely no instruction to pray throughout his Torah. In fact, God says that those who do not observe his Torah, their prayers are an abomination to him, just as this man is to God. And there is absolutely no suffering that is associated with participating in a relationship with God. It is the antithesis of suffering. This man is wrong on everything he says. He continues with his quote, however, in today's world, subject to so many rapid changes and shaken by questions of deep relevance for the life of faith, in order to steer the boat of St. Peter and to proclaim the gospel, both strength of mind and body are necessary, strength which in the last few months has deteriorated in me to the extent that I've had to recognize my incapacity to inadequately fulfill the ministry entrusted to me. There are no saints. Peter had absolutely nothing to do with the Roman Catholic Church. Nothing. And the fact of the matter is, if you want to engage in a relationship with Yahweh, you do so with your mind, not with your body. And the issues of faith are who's going to believe an institution so involved in abusing children. To Shattering Myths, we were talking about the idiotic claim by Roman Catholics that Peter was the first pope and that they're sitting in the seat of Saint Peter. Not only does Yahweh say that the adoration of dead individuals, i.e. saints, is an abomination to him, so by calling Peter a saint, they are sliming themselves and Peter with something that God sees as an abomination, but most everything Roman Catholics do and say is an abomination to God. The reality is that the Roman Catholic Church was created by Constantine when he saw the flaming cross, which was a pagan symbol, superimposed on his God's image, which was the sun. With the voice of Satan say, under this sign, conquer. That was the beginning of Roman Catholicism. The Roman Catholic Church did not exist prior to that time. There is absolutely no reference to church in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, much less in the even in the writings of the so-called Christian New Testament. The word that you would read as a church was described as ecclesia. Ecclesia means to call out, those who are called out. The whole message of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms of Yahweh and of Yahusha is to be called out of the world, to be called away from religion and politics so that one can be called into a relationship with God. Until you are called out of the world, you cannot approach God. So the word in Greek is ecclesia. However, dealing with Shimon, which was the man's name that we're talking about here, it was not Peter, it was Shimon. Speaking to Shimon, Yahusha asked him, who do you say that I am? And he said, you are the Messiah, which means the work of Yahweh, Son of the Living God. And he said, upon this rock, I will build my MCRAE. And he said, wait a minute, that's not, it's not how I know it. Well, the rock is a symbol of the Messiah. So when he recognized that Yahusha was the Messiah, which it means the work of Yah, Yah was God's one and only name. Yahusha actually means Yahweh saves. He identified that as the rock, this the firm foundation of understanding, the platform from which we have a proper perspective of the promises that are given to us in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. The rock of our salvation is, along with the branch, are the two most prolific messianic symbols. So upon this rock, the rock that is the Messiah Yahusha, I will build my MCRAE. Now, why do I say MCRAE and not church? Well, I already told you that church is not written anywhere in Scripture. And that to add misery to foolishness, the word church is based on Churche, which is the name of the daughter of Helios in religions practiced by the Germanic tribes. It speaks of a circle because the circle disc, the halos, were the symbol of the sun god. So that's how that name came into being. Ecclesia is a Greek word. Yahusha did not speak Greek, never once. He spoke Hebrew and Aramaic. In Hebrew, which would have been spoken here because they were talking about the Messiah, which is a Hebrew title, he would have said MCRAE, which means invitations to be called out. And who are invited to call out and who answer that invitation have the opportunity to meet with God. So upon the recognition that it is the work of Yahweh, the Messiah, involved in the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah, and the year 4000 Yah, that recognition is the path to God's home, to our salvation. That's what he said. And therefore, there was no one named Peter. His name was Shimon. And God was not building anything on him, but instead on the recognition of his role as the Messiah, as the work of Yahweh. I told you that I would turn to Pope Ratzinger's document. Many of you know that Joseph Ratzinger, now the outgoing Pope Benedict the 16th, beginning in November of 1981, became the Cardinal Perfect of the Congregation of Doctrine of the Faith. Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith. That was formerly known as the Holy Office, and in the second millennia, it was called the Roman Inquisition. So it is the office of the Inquisition that he held for over a decade. And during that time, he was responsible for reworking an old instruction as to how to handle pedophilia. And we'll return to that topic in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I had promised that I was going to read from the document that Cardinal Ratzinger used in his office of the Inquisition. This time not to seek out heretics, but to protect, veil in secrecy, the most vile acts by clergy, that of sexually abusing children under their care. First, they defined the crime. This is what the document that was deployed by Cardinal Ratzinger in the highest church office read in depicting the crime itself. To have the worst crime for the penal effects, one must do the equivalent of the following. Any obscene external act, gravely sinful, perpetrated in any way by a cleric, or attempted by him with youths of either sex or with brute animals. So the worst crime, according to the Office of the Congregation of Church Doctrine, the Inquisition Office, is pedophilia and bestiality. In fact, in this, bestiality and pedophilia are put on par with one another. So when an act of pedophilia or bestiality is committed, here is the proper response by Catholic clerics regarding the perpetrator, regarding the crime. Because, however, it is treated in this case as to have a greater degree of care and observance so that those same matters be pursued in a most secretive way. And after they have been defined or given over to execution, which it means over to this particular office that Ratzinger headed, they are to be restrained by the perpetual silence. And each and every one pertaining to the tribunal in any way or admitted to knowledge of the matters because of their office is to observe the strictest secret. It is commonly regarded as a secret of the holy office in all matters with all persons under penalty of excommunication. Pretty clear, huh? Secret listed three times. That as it relates to the crime of pedophilia or bestiality by clerics, that it is to be first and foremost perpetual silence. It is to be the strictest of all secrets. And anyone who divulges the secret will be excommunicated from the church. Now, the oath of keeping the secret, the next point opines, must be given in these cases also by the accusers or those who are witnesses. So here now, not only is the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church supposed to keep it secret that their priests are abusing children, they are now to provide an oath. Even the victims are to provide an oath, as are the witnesses to the crime. Here is how the oath reads. I, so-and-so, appearing before and touching the most holy gospels of God, placed before me, swear and promise to exercise my duty faithfully. Likewise, under the plan of excommunication, and to be incurred without any declaration, from which outside of the moment of death I can be absolved by no one except the Holy Father, excluding even the cardinal of the penitentiary, and under the most serious penalties, at the disposition of the supreme pontiff to be inflicted upon me in the case of transgression, I promise sacredly, I vow and swear, to observe the inviolably the secret in all matters and details which take place in existing and aforesaid duty. So I'm going to observe the absolute secrets in all matters and all details while exercising my duty. Otherwise, I'm going to be excommunicated and I'm going to have the most serious penalties placed upon me by the Pope himself. Further, I shall observe this secret absolutely and in every way with all who have no legitimate part in the treatment of this same matter or who are not constricted by the same sworn oath. So just in case you thought for a moment that the secret only has to be kept within the church and that perhaps I can tell this to law enforcement so that the victims can seek retribution. No, can't do that. It says you have to keep this secret with everyone who is not bound by the same sworn oath. Now, will I ever directly or indirectly by means of a nod or a word, by writing or in any other way under whatever type of pretext, even for the most urgent and most serious crime, even for the purpose of a greater good, commit anything against this fidelity to the secret, unless a particular faculty or disposition has been expressly given to me by the supreme pontiff. Unless the Pope says I can speak and divulge the secret, I will cover it up. I will protect the church's image. I will protect the abusive priests. I will allow them to continue to commit acts of pedophilia against other Roman Catholic children, but under no circumstances will I divulge the secret. I'll take it to my grave. We're now going to turn to Jason, who's calling in from Pennsylvania. He has a comment about Obama Nation visiting Jerusalem. Hi, Jason.
Morning, Yada. Bless you. I just a comment on what you've just been speaking on. I can't think of anything more vile or atrocious than what, you know, I pray that people that are in the Catholic Church that actually have a soul understand what that organization, the Vatican, is all about.
Yeah, they all have souls, but most of them don't have working consciousness, consciences anymore. They, just like the Pope, have so underused their ability to think rationally and to exercise good judgment, they seem incapable of it. For anyone to remain a member of the Roman Catholic Church after these crimes have now been divulged, you're a fool. You're absolutely a fool.
Totally agreed.
Agreed. You deserve your own fate.
That's right. Well, I just wanted to, I don't want to take you off your topic, so I'll just try and weave my question or comment in to what you've been talking about. I see a convergence of events right now in this particular time that I really feel that maybe prophetically on the prophetic timeline, we're farther down the road than we might have imagined prior. What would you say about that, Yada?
The timeline of Yah's is literally set in stone. He's going to return on Yom Kippurim in the year 6000 Yah. Now, while it is always difficult to correlate a pagan calendar with God's divine timepiece, there is every reason to recognize that in the 3968 BCE, Adam and Chawal were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, that 1,000 years later, in 2968 BCE, that the Burkle crater impact occurred, and there was the flood in the area of Mesopotamia, that is the issue associated with Noah, that 1,000 years later, in 1968 BCE, that Abraham walked with Yitzhak up Mount Moriah as a dress rehearsal for Pesach Passover, and affirmed the covenant, that 1,000 years later, at 968 BCE, that the cornerstone was laid for Yahweh's house, his temple, on Mount Moriah by Solomon, that exactly 1,000 years later, in 33 CE, there's no year zero, therefore it's 1,000 years from 968 to 33 CE, that Yahusha fulfilled the first four Mikre, Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah, 1,000 years later, fulfilling the Torah's promise in Bamidbar regarding adultery. The waters under the temporal were poisoned in 133 CE. And then we're now looking at the next Yobel year, the only Yobel year that remains, because all of these things took place in a Yobel year, which occurs every 50 years. And we're looking at multiples of 40 Yobel years for major events. The next Yobel year.
Is 2017 one of them?
No.
Okay. All right.
No. The next Yobel year is 2033.
Okay.
And that will be exactly 2,000 years or 40 Yobel from the time that Yahusha fulfilled the first four of the Moed Mikre. He will fulfill the last two, returning on Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations. On our pagan calendar, that is 6:22 p.m. in Jerusalem on October 2nd,
okay,
in 2033.
I have one question for you, Yada.
Yobel,
what we in English would say Jubilee?
Yeah, Jubilee is just a corruption of it. Yobel is the proper transliteration.
Right.
I mean, But the Lamb is Yah, and it is the time where sins are forgiven, debts are forgiven, people are freed, land is returned, and so it is the year that is symbolic of all the things that Yahweh does for us during his Moed Mikra, his invitations to be called out and to meet with him. And they all occur, the major fulfillments all occur on Yovel years.
I heard 2017 was one of them, so that's not true.
No,
okay.
That is not true. No, it's every 50 years. So, you know, if 2033 is one of them, then you have to go back 50 years for the previous one. And the reality is that, these events, in terms of major fulfillments, only occur on every 40 Yovel. 40 times 50 is 2,000 years. So the big events in human history relative to our salvation are the day that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden, which began the time clock. 2,000 years later, 40 Yovel was when Abraham affirmed the covenant on Mount Moriah. Exactly 40 Yovel later is when Yahusha walked into Jerusalem and also fulfilled the first four of the Moed Mikra. And 2,000 years after that, 40 Yovel takes us exactly to 2033. And the next Moed Mikra that will be fulfilled by that time is reconciliations. That is when he is returning.
I see. Okay. Well, I just thought it was very interesting that Obama is going to be coming into Jerusalem 5 days before, just like Christ did, Passover.
Yeah. It's actually 4 days before is when the Passover lamb is supposed to come into Jerusalem. So it appears that Obama is trying to play the role of Messiah, but doesn't know the timing. We'll return to this and to the Catholic malfeasance when Shattering Mist returns in a moment. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Mist. I am your host, Yada. I want to speak just briefly to the point that was raised regarding Obama and Jerusalem. It is quite possible that he is attempting to come in acting as the Messiah. He has done everything he can to present himself as a messianic figure since he's taken office. He wants people to believe that he is their savior. It is possible that he is attempting to mirror the requirement of the Messiah when he walked into Jerusalem 4 days before Passover in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE on our pagan calendars, because the Hebrew day starts at sundown, and so Passover in 33 CE, for example, started on Thursday night. You know, it differs every year based upon the day of the week means nothing to it. It starts on the 14th day. Well, the 14th day in Hebrew begins at sunset on the 13th day and runs through sunset on the 14th day. So if you were looking at Passover, not at its beginning, but during the day that it is, it continues through, then it would be 5 days before. The scriptural instruction is 4 days before. Four in scripture, like the 40 Yovel, is all about a time of completing a time of evaluation. And it was the Pesach lamb that would be evaluated over that period of time. And so in 33 CE, Yahusha came into Jerusalem on a Monday. It was a branch Monday, not Palm Sunday. And he then left town on and was out of town on Tuesday and Wednesday, came back into town on Thursday evening to celebrate the Passover meal with his disciples, and then on Friday of that year he became the Passover lamb. He fulfilled Pesach beginning on Friday evening at sunset through Saturday evening. He fulfilled matzah, which is unleavened bread, which is the single most important day on the calendar, because that's the day that we are perfected and therefore we are redeemed. And then he was the living embodiment of Bukonim, or first fruits, the firstborn child, when his soul and spirit were reunited on Bukonim. His body had been destroyed the evening of Passover in accordance with the Torah, so there was no bodily resurrection. That's why no one recognized him. The new form that he took was unrecognizable to anyone who had previously known him. And then Seven Shabbat later, seven sevens later, the promise of seven sevens was fulfilled, empowering and enriching those who had benefited from the observance of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim, and they were empowered and enriched, enriched with Yahweh's Torah teaching, empowered with His Spirit, so that they might become effective messengers of God's Word. So the President of the United States walking into Jerusalem 5 days before the day of Passover, as opposed to 4 days before it commences, which would be one and the same, is not a surprise for this arrogant potentate. I'm going to return to the story of Roman Catholicism. We'll continue this in the future programs, although I would like to get back to the study of light that we were doing on Thursday. And I have a lot of stories queued up. The first one I'm going to share with you was presented before Cardinal Roger Mahoney and before Santa Barbara Bush, Bishop, who was then Monsignor and became Bishop Thomas Curry, resigned, actually were forced to resign over the cover-up. But the story sets the scene so nicely. Let's consider it. This is from the Los Angeles Times. According to recently released church records, Cardinal Roger Mahoney, Archbishop of Los Angeles, he became cardinal, as you said, but he was Archbishop of Los Angeles, as well as one of the top one of his top advisors, who we will find was Monsignor Thomas Curry, who became Bishop Curry, worked to protect from the police. So worked to protect not the children who were abused, but worked to protect the Catholic priests from police. So it actually reads, advisors actively work to protect from the police Catholic priests who raped and molested children. It's not well worded, but the idea here is that rather these documents prove that the Roman Catholic Church, rather than trying to protect Catholic children from pedophile priests, instead work to protect the pedophile priests from the police. The advisor who helped protect criminals was Monsignor Thomas J. Curry, the Archdiocese chief advisor on sexual abuse cases at the time. Hardly a surprise that Catholic officials have been fighting for years to prevent the public from seeing this evidence, just as they have fought for decades to conceal the priests themselves. But when these documents were released last week, it was game over. The Catholic Church lost a bishop, a cardinal, and a pope.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that most...